Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. And today I'm joined by David Chase, who is the CMO of Workboard. David, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm super excited to join you today, Mason.
Well, I think our audience is excited, if not alone, by the accent that you bring to the show, which has a higher degree of sophistication than I do. I'm excited to dig into it for a variety of reasons. But one, if anybody goes and looks at your LinkedIn, which they should go and connect with you, you aren't just a CMO that was hired at Workboard, but you actually rose through the ranks from director to VP to CMO in a four-year time frame. So one, kudos to you for the impact that you've made. I'm excited to dig into a specific portion of the impact. So as we were prepping for this, there were like four or five stories that we could dig into. So again, if you're not following David, go check him out. Really knowledgeable, solid marketing leader that is in the weeds. I can talk through tactics. So appreciate that. And I'm excited. The specific story we're talking through is building a demand program completely from scratch. And this happened 2.5 years into your tenure with Workboard. So it wasn't like a day one. It was a kind of a rebuild of sorts. So really, before I dig into anything else, any other context you want to provide to us before we dig into the story itself?
Yeah, no, super happy to dig in. And thanks for the intro. Yeah, the 4 years have been a journey for sure, and sort of lots and ups and downs, and excited to share some of the specifics with you today. And yeah, it's for sure rebuilding the DG has been a journey and one that we continue to evolve on. So yeah, it's exciting times.
I love it. Well, you stepped into the CMO role, and as a part of that, you're tasked with standing up a demand gen program, hiring a whole team, building out a new process. I mean, truly starting from scratch. So before we dig into targeting channel, I'm just even curious, how did you figure out who to even hire to help you build this new program?
The timing is interesting, and it certainly wasn't a time of we've got unlimited budgets to go and hire endless amounts of people or throw dollars at endless programs. It was scrappy. I mean, funnily enough, it was super scrappy. And if I think about org structure a little bit, the org structure in the marketing team at Workboard is an interesting one. We've got a couple of team members who have been with Workboard since day one, super knowledgeable of the domain, super knowledgeable of Workboard and the problem that we solve, which was really helpful as we thought about shifting back into a more new logo focused demand gen motion. So when we think about the skill set that we needed to bring onto the team, really, it's the typical people you'd expect. One growth person that is responsible for sort of the end-to-end campaign build out, tracking, writing emails, everything about that part of the role. And then really on the BDR side. So the way where Workboard is, we're still evolving into the category. We're still growing at a high percentage. And we're still very much high touch. Like our buyer is senior folks. And the BDR role is really important for us to be able to uncover new opportunities. So when we think about the org structure, we sort of had those couple folks that were Workboard domain experts, very good at creative, very good at programming, very good at marketing operations, bringing on someone on the growth side who can really think about campaigns start to finish, and then layering in the BDRs to be able to do the everything from sort of the hand-to-hand combat every day of the calls and the emails and putting people into sequences, finding new targets and prospects, through to discovery calls and ultimately making sure the handoff process to the sales team is a good one.
So what I'm hearing is you guys already had a couple people on the team that were great talent. And the big gap to fill was on the growth side, which is messaging, working through positioning, and just identifying even how we want to speak to the different audiences and the BD layer. So it's not just we're going to generate awareness and have great marketing programs and content, but it's specifically how do we connect the content engagement that we're getting to actually booking a meeting. And as you said, and we'll talk about this in here in a moment, but you guys really do go after specifically C-suite levels. I mean, really high seniority buyers, the highest seniority buyers. So want to make sure that we have a personalized engagement the entire way through in order to actually get their attention, to make sure we're being very nuanced in how we approach things. I'm hearing all that correctly?
100%. Yeah, 100%. And again, we'll come to sort of more specific challenges a bit later, but when we think about who we go after, when we think about the problem that we're solving, which is a strategic problem at the most senior part of an organization, and we're selling into enterprises, that personalization and that real knowledge and confidence about the problem that we're solving is something that has to come through at sort of every step of any campaign that we run, whether it be a paid ad that we're putting out there, whether it be a touch from the BDR, whether it be a marketing email. It's super important that message lands, and super important that it's consistent and is appropriate for the person that we're going after.
So you hired the right team in place. I'm curious, as you then looked at, we're going to stand up this program, we need to be really intentional with who we're going after, because especially if you're staying at something new, you need to get some quick wins. If you don't start to build early momentum, plug's going to get pulled pretty quick. So I'm curious, as you were then looking at specifically targeting, like how did you determine the right people to even go after?
So highest level, we like, let's just take a step back and let's just take a look at what really our ICP should be. And we did a couple of things there. One is we looked at our customer base again, and we said, let's look at the companies that expand, the companies that renew reliably. Like, what's common about those people? Is it obvious things like company size or employee count or who the buyer is? Some of those things are super obvious. What we wanted to do, though, was say, okay, what else is actually common about these organizations? And one super specific example that we lean into and that we found is that the problem that we solve is an alignment and accountability problem. How do we make sure enterprise teams can get aligned, they understand the goals that they're working towards, and managers can translate that to the rest of their teams so that the work they're doing connects back to where the company wants to go? That's the problem that we solve. Okay. Now, when we looked at the customer base with that sort of double click, it was like, okay, we do have some customers that are sort of hot startups that are growing at 100%, and that's great. And like, OKRs are the cool thing, and they're going to just roll out OKRs, and that's great. But in reality, most of those organizations haven't actually felt the pain yet of misalignment and needed to be super efficient. Like, it's when you're growing at 100%, it's fine if stuff's a little bit like not perfect, and the percentage growth manages to sort of paper over the cracks of the other parts of the business. When you're like something like a 100-year-old company all the way up to a 15, 20-year-old company of varying sizes, the sort of cracks start to show a little bit, and the sort of like history starts to bubble up. And that's particularly true when there's leadership changes and those types of things happen in an organization. So when we looked at the customer base, one of the things we sort of recognize is that actually when organizations are a little bit more mature, they're not just throwing money at the problem. They're actually growing at an efficient rate with a solid leadership team that understands the domain, that understands the problem that they're trying to solve. They're really trying to grow a sustainable business. Those organizations actually fit much closer to where we see great expansion in our customer base and real solid renewal rate. So that gave us an opportunity to say, okay, yes, our ICP is the standard things like over a certain amount of employees. And yes, it has to have this many knowledge workers. And yes, it has to be this type of person that's buying. But it also managed to let us layer on things like, okay, well, actually, it's better if they're like 20 years old, because that's sort of a proxy for they're not just growing and throwing money at the problem. They actually have some sort of operating structure and rigor that is helpful for us when we're engaging with organizations.
I love the specific call out on years in existence, because I think most people are looking at like revenue and headcount in industry, but a company that's 5 years old at 15 million is very different than a company that's 25 years old at 15 million. Because to go from zero to 15 in 5 years, yeah, that's rapid growth. You're just throwing money at problems.
Yeah.
If they're at 25 years old and 15 million, and they've spent at 15 million for a few years, they're stuck. probably misaligned, and you got to fix it.
And even if they're growing, even if they're not stuck at a figure like that, even if they're growing more, maybe they're growing at 20% rather than 150%, or maybe they're growing at 10% rather, whatever. The sort of the operating cracks are there. Everybody knows them inside the organization, and it's a real meaningful way to make a difference in their organization is let's go and fix that alignment problem. Let's go and make sure everyone knows what they're working towards. Let's sort of not just let another day, another week, another year go past doing what we've always done in the hope that it's going to get better, which for many startups, it does. There's a new problem tomorrow. And like that problem wasn't really a problem. And now we're growing at 200% rather than 150% because we've found this new market that we're going after. All those things are great. It was just interesting to us to be able to take that closer look at where we're really successful and the types of organizations where we're really successful, and actually pull that forward to right at the top of the funnel when we're thinking about who we go after and who we target. So we set ourselves up for success in a year's time, in 2 years' time, 3 years' time, and not be naive to the fact that, we could go and sign up a company today, or we could go and spend some dollars marketing to a company today that we might sign a contract. It might be new ARR in the door, but actually for the company, if we're thinking about long-term growth and long-term sustainability, it's not the right thing to do.
Thank you for actually communicating that, because people are like, you want to exclude companies that we could work with? And I'm like, because they're going to leave 6 months from now or a year from now. And I'd rather the ones that stick around for five. So thank you for calling out like the ABM works when you look at lifetime value more so than just like ARR. So I love that. I'm curious because communicating is really specific. It's like we work with large organizations that are a bit older that have stagnated due to misalignment. How did you work through the actual messaging and content that communicated that to your ideal buyers?
I'm a big believer in, this isn't new, but like I'm a big believer in references and letting customers tell the story. So one of the most exciting things about Workboard when I joined over 4 years ago as a director of product marketing, the thing that I was so excited about is taking a look at the homepage and seeing all the logos and then looking at the page that was second on the top navigation that said customers and going to that page and then seeing a scroll and a scroll and a scroll of customer quotes that support all of those great logos that we saw on the homepage. There are so many companies out there that you see the glamorous big logos on the homepage and you just do a little bit of a click somewhere else on the site and there's no quote, there's no nothing, there's no story, there's no whatever. And to me, it's great if you have volume there and it's great if you have great logos and then quotes to support it. But actually, as you think about being focused on the people that you want to go and sell more to, actually just having a handful, get four, get five great logos and great quotes that you can rely on and that you can use over and over again. You can help use those to help tell the story. There's nothing worse, in my opinion, than having logos that don't have anything behind them. Like they don't have any quotes, they don't have any podcast appearances, they don't have any members of their staff speaking on our yearly event stage. There's none of that. It's just hollow. Whereas I think really focusing on where you have strong stories and then using that messaging like front and foremost as you go out and target different people that are obviously connected from a segment perspective is important, industry perspective is important. But even if they're not, I think one of the biggest shifts that's happened in the last few years is industries are still incredibly important in terms of expanding. But I also think horizontal peers are more aware of each other now than they ever have been. I mean, like podcasts like this, it's you've got a community of ABM people or CMOs or whoever it might be. It's so easy, despite the industry, to be able to like connect with other people that are solving the same problem from a peer level. And I think that happens a lot more now. Stuff that's been around for a long time, but it's super common. And I think leaning into the person and leaning into their position and the problem they're solving probably trumps the industry bit a little bit at the moment. So if you're standing up a program and you have a great quote from a VP of sales that, and that's who you're selling to, I'd lean into the title and the person, even if it's not an ideal match for the industry.
You're making me actually rethink some of our own marketing because we've on our website got like a bunch of quotes, but it just literally just occurred to me, oh yeah, I should probably run ads up against our target accounts at the same decision maker level with the quotes and the faces of our customers. Like basics. And I'm not even doing it for myself. So thank you for the reminder. And again, I love the call out of when you do good work, your customers will actually tell the best story because they're sharing their pain point that you help them overcome. And no one has better words for your customers than your customers.
100%. You can spend millions of dollars if you wanted to, or thousands of hours doing like testing and research and et cetera, but a 20-minute conversation with a real customer about the problem that they bought you to solve is worth all of those things.
Now that we've nailed down some of the content and again, the messaging and using the voice of the customer literally to help tell that story, I'm curious, how did you get that message in front of the audience? What were the channels you guys used and how'd you make sure that you had the repeatability for these target accounts that you're going after so that it wasn't just like a one shot, they saw you once, then you were gone forever?
One of the things that I'm incredibly passionate about is our annual event. It's called Accelerate, happens in October. We've done it in person for the last 2 years in its current format. Before that, we did it, not me personally, but the company did it online through the COVID era for a couple of years. And before that, there was a sort of smaller version of it that happened when the company was a little bit smaller. The reason why I'm so incredibly passionate about that is it gives you the opportunity to do a couple of things. One is it puts a date on the calendar where you're going to get a couple hundred people, 200-300 people of your customers together. You can invite some prospects, and in the room, those prospects get to speak and hear from customers that have done great things. It's sort of an obvious like win. I think the other thing is having the opportunity to bring great customer examples it together, put some of them on the stage, gives you an incredible opportunity to get your team members, so the company, to learn and have those conversations that we just spoke about. You get to hear the problem from the customer's mouths in their words about what we're doing to help them solve their problems. Lets us then take that back and use it in our marketing for the next whole year. And also gives us an almost endless supply of content, voice of customer assets, to be able to, again, use in our marketing and in our outreach for the next year and more. Like, we still use it from 2 or 3 years ago when it's right, because they're such great stories. So there's those benefits about having this sort of date on the calendar to bring people together and have the sort of bigger event, as well as the opportunity to obviously impact revenue and build pipeline, which I'm sort of happy to talk about on this or at a later date. But the event has been a really big win for us for those couple of reasons. Being able to get people together, build the community, learn as a company about what's great and be able to repurpose some of that. And then obviously the revenue impact that it has on the business.
I've been thinking about doing an event and now I'm just thinking, because we could literally just have our customers break down the ABM programs that we've built with them. Yep. And just have them be the heroes at our own event. And we don't have to say anything. Like, yep. We can just, that's so smart.
I think people get scared. It's, oh, we're going to do an event and it's going to has to be 1,000 people or it's not worth anything. It really doesn't. Like 10 people, 6 customers and 3 prospects. Like, they are just as effective as a 200 person event and 1,000 person event. If they're done well, the budget's aligned to what the goals you're trying to achieve. And it's such a great like multiplier effect on the conversations that both you have in the room with those people, they have with each other. And then they want to be part of something bigger than buying software or buying marketing services or being like whatever it might be. It just elevates who you are in their mind.
So we're using the event, creating a lot of great content. And also the event in and of itself is distribution. You got a bunch of promotion to get people there and then some follow-ups after. I'm curious, what were some of the channels that you used post-event and then throughout the year to distribute this information?
Most of the mix, when we stood up the DG team again, if you like, it was simple. Like, it was, okay, we're going to have small paid channel budget, and the channels that were effective for us are, again, not going to be news to anyone. Google and LinkedIn is incredibly effective for us because of who we're selling to and who influences our deals. And the targeting, again, I'm a huge believer in, I'd rather spend a dollar knowing that it's been in front of the person that I want it to be in front of than spending 10 cents on a hope that it gets close to someone that might care if they look sideways out the window. at Workboard. So I'm a big believer in be super targeted on the list. Use a platform like, even if it's just an ad platform like LinkedIn, where you can actually be specific about who you want to get into. Yes, it costs a little bit more per click or per impression, whatever, but I think it's worth it. And then really just lots of email, and email on a couple fronts. One is we call it marketing emails and then BDR emails, but effectively sort of broader educational emails to the full ICP, and then 4 or 5 personas at those companies that we think tend to be involved in the buying process. And then we use super rudimentary lead scoring, like very rudimentary lead scoring in Salesforce, to effectively pull those down into a list for the BDRs. BDRs will then pull those into Apollo. We've done that integration and have a sequence running for people that are like slightly warmer than ice cold. And, you know, that sequence will be calls, it'll be LinkedIn outreach, it'll be emails. Calling still works. Like my first job was a BDR. Like I was doing $100 a day and making calls. Like it's probably the hardest job in sales, probably the hardest job in marketing, but it works. And yes, it's a bit of a numbers game, but if it's supported by things that your webinars or events or content or other things that you can have, BDRs can have the conversation around that aren't just asking for a meeting every time, it works. And then yeah, email and LinkedIn from more personalized email and LinkedIn from the BDRs. And then I sort of dropped in their webinars. We do some like other events throughout the years, whether they be online or in person, that aren't sort of the main event. And that's it. That's the vast majority of what we do. It's super simple, like not complicated. We don't spend a lot of money on technology. It's really about dialing into the right message, the right people, and then measuring everything. I want to spend a bit of time on targets in a second, but like measuring everything every day is how you make these programs effective.
What about the channel mix you just outlined? Is there wasn't a single silver bullet. It was your standard channels executed well in such a way that actually is relevant for a buyer using the words of your customers. If you just do that, it's not magic. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight and just suddenly you've got a full pipeline, but that plus consistency will create some level of pipeline based on, again, we know this product works super well for customers just like you because we have a bunch of other ones that look just like you and this is what they're saying.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and dig into measurement because you took the words out of my mouth of, I'd love to understand, because some of this, especially these events that are seem to be a pretty big component, those are very difficult to track and report onto a board sometimes. So I'm just curious for you, because you're looking at the ways in which you measure success of all your different programs, how are you measuring and setting expectations internally?
So two things I'd love to cover on targets is one, the standing up the program and then how we set targets and how we measure every day for that to be effective. And then I'll quickly cover off the event ROI one and then I'll jump back there. So really the way that I thought about the event piece is we have X dollars are going into this event. We know what that is. It's a relatively fixed amount. We charge a fee for the tickets. Like it doesn't cover the event. It's an investment from our side. We align on what we're comfortable investing there. And then really, I broke it down into really three components. The first being how much of the ARR of our customers that are renewing in the next 6 months are in the room. How much expansion can we drive from the customers that we get into the room? And then how much new logo pipeline can we build from the prospects that we get into the room? And I think it's really important to not just think about the new logo part when the event is wrapped around your company and that you're using it for something more than just trying to close new dollars. And that's why I like to make sure we look at the renewals. And what that allows us to do is say, okay, I've got 200 people that I can get to this event. I want to choose every person that takes a seat at this event. Like it's really important that you get the people that are making decisions or that are influencing decisions at the accounts that are going to pay you more dollars if they like you in the next 6 to 12 months. Get them there. Don't let it happen by chance. Don't hope that they see an ad and or they see your website and they register and they get to come and it's all just some happy coincidence. Be super intentional about the companies and the people that you're getting into the room. That way you can break it down and say, okay, like we've been intentional. We've set aside 60% of the people that are coming are from customers that we know are renewing in the next X period of time. And I can set a dollar target around that. The next one is, okay, of those, we've got some expansion opportunities already. We also think there's expansion opportunities at this set of accounts. Let's get those in. And then finally, let's allocate 20% of the tickets to new prospects. And then we can set a target based on, okay, we've got 40 tickets and let's say 10 of those turn into dollars and like we can do an average deal size and we can set a target around it. And then just be really maniacal about the follow-up. So making sure that every single person, whether it be the CSMs or the BDRs or the salespeople, have their follow-up and they know what they're driving towards post-event.
I just love the simple breakdown of actually assign tickets to intended audiences. You can set goals around what you expect those audiences to produce. It's very simple, but really sets a good expectation front end before we've even gotten to the event. So just, I wanted to call that out as like, I'm taking more notes for things we should recommend for our customers.
I'll jump back to the sort of the program itself as we sort of started to define it. So the reality was like 2022, 2023, tough time in SaaS. Workboard didn't escape that. The decision we made early in that time frame was let's focus on our existing customers, let's double down on expansion, let's really drive solid value to our customers while times are tough, while it's a lockdown. We know they're going to open up again. We know if we've got looked after our customers, we're going to be in a good spot when the world changes again. So that's what we did. We saw signals mid-2024 of wallets opening up, new buyers coming back into the market. There was a shift in the mentality. So really, it was Q3 of 2024. We were like, okay, let's invest in the things we spoke about already. Someone in growth, some BDRs, some dollars for building demand. Let's go and capture this market. And the sort of net of that really is we've gone from 3.5 times the amount of qualified pipeline that we generate as a team from Q3 last year to we're about to end Q1. So the end of Q1, we're already at 3.5x what we were at the Q3 2024. And for context, that's generating 3.5 million plus of qualified ARR from our small team of 3 BDRs. So how do we do it? And what do we measure along the way? First and foremost is have to align with sales, have to align with CRO about what a good outcome looks like. And for us, it was, let's focus on making sure we have qualified pipeline. We defined what qualified meant. Again, for us, it was stage one plus. So the salesperson had a meeting and the salesperson has said, I think this is a $100,000 opportunity. Qualified pipeline. Okay, everyone understands what we're aiming towards. And then the thing that I spent time doing, because I think it's important, is I'm just going to do simple numbers. To get $1 million worth of pipeline, how many stage zero opportunities do we need? Let's say it's $100,000 opportunity. So we need 100 deals at stage one. How many stage zero would we need? Okay, what's our conversion rate? Let's use previous data. Let's use benchmarks in the industry. And okay, we need 150 stage zero opportunities. Okay, for 150 stage zero opportunities, how many meetings do we need to book as a BDR team? Right, it's, again, conversion math. And we work all the way up the funnel until we get down to how many calls does each BDR need to make every single day? And how many emails do they need to send every single day? And then I have a list. It's about 12 measures that go all the way down the funnel. And then the conversion rates at the bottom. And every single day, the BDR team update their daily calls. They update their daily emails. And I look at the conversion math and I look at how it's progressing down the funnel. Once a week, we review it as a marketing team. Once a week, we review it as a revenue leadership team as part of our forecast call. And probably every couple of weeks, it's an SLT topic of what have we learned, what's changed. And it's like, when I say measure, it's important that you actually understand the numbers. Don't just set up a dashboard and have all these things there, call it a CMO dashboard or call it your growth dashboard, and you flash it up on the screen once a week or even once a day, and you don't really look at it because you're on your phone, like looking at something else, or you're drinking your coffee, like digest it, understand every single measurement, take accountability and ownership for them. That is the only way you will drive any predictability in the campaigns that you're running. And it's super important to focus at that top level, because if they do not make those calls every day, there is absolutely no hope we're getting anywhere near the meetings book target. And then there's no hope we're getting anywhere near the pipeline target. And the thing that I can control as a leader is whether they make the calls or not. I can't control the bottom of the funnel until it's far too late. The only thing I can control is if they're making the calls and if they're making the emails. And that's the thing that I focus on every day. And that's the thing that we make the BDRs focus on. And they like it. They want to take ownership for it. They understand after a couple of weeks, a couple of quarters, the connection between the work that they're doing and the outcomes that they're driving.
I just love the level of granularity on the inputs. As I'm working through building out our organization and working with a lot of clients, it's just like, the outputs are only predictable based on the number of inputs that you actually are putting in. So yes, I think we'd all love if we could just focus on how many meetings do we have this week, but you only get meetings based on the number of things you're actually doing to generate those meetings. So thank you for getting into the granularity of how you're actually doing that math and the dashboards that you're looking at. And then also just even like the leadership level cadences at which you're addressing and assessing how that's going.
Yep.
So last couple of questions before we close out would just be, one, what were some of the results you actually saw from standing up this program?
Yeah, well, let's break it down a little bit. So BDRs had a meeting target, and they, since Q3, have basically hit the target pretty much on the nose. They had like this quarter, they're a little bit over. So they're between 100 and 110% of quota attainment in the last three quarters. So great, super great early signal of that the rest is going to work. And then the biggest result, which is the one that we aligned with, the CRO and I aligned on, is, okay, how much pipeline are we going to drive? And effectively, we've 3.5 times the output of the pipeline generated. So from Q3 to now, we've seen a 3.5 times growth in that pipeline. And that's really then from basically a standing start. So the 3.5x is from the first quarter we stood it up. Obviously, before the quarter before that, it was effectively a standing start. We didn't have a team, we weren't measuring. The amount of marketing generated pipeline was inbound leads only that got converted. And then again, it was few and far between in terms of like how we actually tracked that and measured it. So I think that was the big one. I think it's super important to just be solely focused on the pipeline, the revenue that you're generating.
I love it. What were some of the things that you guys, as you were building, were just some of the challenges that you bumped up against that if you knew what you knew now, you would do a little bit differently next time?
I think we're still learning a lot, and we definitely don't have it solved 100%. I think that's the beauty of it. And I think the beauty of marketing is that there isn't a finish line. It's an evolution for sure. Yeah. So maybe I don't think I would change anything, because everything is a lesson. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I think it's important to go through the challenges and to learn what you learn as you stand programs up. And testing is the foundation of every good, successful marketing team and tech company. I think generally the challenge, the hardest thing for us, and one that we continue to work on, is just who our buyer is and cutting through noise for that buyer. And the sort of buy team in a deal, it, like I say, it's almost always sponsored by the CEO or a business unit leader, someone who owns a P&L. That's who the ultimate buyer is more often than not. But there's, again, very often then leaders that are on that team that would be the day-to-day power users of Workboard, would be those middle managers. They get a ton of value from Workboard because it helps them be a more effective manager, get the goals and results that they want to drive. And then we almost always then also have a business process person, whether it be like a chief of staff or someone who sort of manages the program that we're also selling to. So we encounter all three of those people in every single deal that we do. Sometimes we start on that door. Sometimes we start on the other door. Like it really varies. So the sort of the continuous learning and the continuous challenge that we have is just making sure that our messaging is dialed and the channels that we use are dialed into each of those three groups of people, because they are quite different. and the message is quite different and the thing they want is quite different. Just as a super tactical example, the CEO is looking for how do they achieve the goals that they've given to the board. That's the thing. Their strategy is they believe in their strategy, otherwise they wouldn't be in the seat that they're in. And the thing they care about more than anything is making sure that their organization can go execute that strategy. And we give them a way to do that more reliably, to do it faster. That's different from a manager or a leader who is, the leader's job is, okay, I've got this stuff from the senior leadership team. I've got this strategy. My job is to go translate that and turn it into goals that my team can go and work on every quarter or every month, or every week. Yep. My job is to give them coaching. My job is to make sure that I'm that translation layer and nowadays doing a lot of the work as well. And then there's the process owner who's, I'm just trying to manage this program at scale across 10,000 people. And that brings its own challenges. And like, yep. The messaging for each of those groups is just different and super important. So it's that constant balance of making sure that we refine who we go after, how we go after them, the channels we use to get after them, and just make sure we're learning and not standing still with the messaging and the outreach.
David, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. If people want to find out more about you or Workboard, where would you point them?
Yeah, LinkedIn, definitely. For me, happy to connect and chat more with people. And then, yeah, Workboard, just the website, workboard.com, and or again, reach out and I'm happy to share more.
Well, again, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.